there, ladies and gentlemen. This is Tim Binal with BinalofAmerica.com. Welcome to the June 11th, 2005 edition of Binal of America Audio. Free MP3s of esoteric legends and esoteric events that are legendary. And that's what we have this week with part two of the post-X conference press conference held at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. Binal was there, on location, on the ground, embedded, and I got all the press conference, and we're rolling it out through the month of June. And today, part two is packed. It is packed with names. I could spend all day talking about each of the different people who are going to be featured here in this portion of the press conference, but I'll try and make it brief. You know Alfred Weber, you know Dr. Michael Sala, and you know Steve Bassett. Those three have been featured at Binal of America Audio in previous weeks. But three names you haven't heard from yet, which you will today. Richard Dolan, he's a historian. He's the author of the critically acclaimed UFOs and the National Security State. Grant Cameron, a native of Canada, he's done extensive study on the relationship between the UFO phenomenon and past U.S. presidents. And Bob Wood, a former aerospace engineer. He specializes in document work in the UFO field, and he has additional specialization in crash retrieval research. You can find all their websites at BinalofAmerica.com audio. So, without any further ado, let's get down to it. Part two of the post-X conference press conference held at the National Press Club on April 25th, 2005.
Now what I want to do now is introduce Alfred Weber, who is the founder of the term exopolitics and an advanced thinker and futurist, whose life was disrupted and shut down when he dared to ask President Carter to do what President Carter already decided to do. He's moved on from there, and he has some announcements for you about his work and where it's going to go. Alfred.
Thank you. Thank you. I have some copies of a media advisory here for those who'd like to take a look at it. My name is Alfred Weber. I'm the International Director of the Institute for Cooperation in Space. We're an educational nonprofit organization based in Vancouver, Canada, and in Vilcabamba, Ecuador. And we're here today to announce an initiative which we have already brought to the Canadian Senate in March of 2005, and which is underway in Canada. But we announce it today for release in the United States and sort of for kickoff in the United States. And we call it our Earth Day Exopolitics Initiative. As you know, April 22nd was International Earth Day, our home planet. And today is April 25th. And so this was the closest date that we could schedule to Earth Day. And so what underlies the purpose of this initiative is the present and future well-being of Gaia, our planet Earth. Basically, what we're calling on today is for the government of the United States to take the issue of extraterrestrial life, it has been stuck in conflict and for the last 60 years, and take it out of the military intelligence agencies and put it into the Department of Education and the scientific departments where it belongs. Take it out of the threat scenario agencies where it is funded as a potential threat, and put it into the opportunity agencies where it is funded as a matter of education and advancement of knowledge for mutual benefit. And so we are calling upon the government of the United States in all of its branches and all of its administrative agencies to undertake a 10-year, what we call a decade of contact. In other words, a 10-year period of major federally funded public education about advanced off-planet cultures now visiting Earth. And this 10-year process would be funded public education, curriculum, development. It's an acknowledgement that we live in a populated universe. What our scientific paradigm up to the 20th century has said that all intelligent life ends at the geostationary orbit, and that's the orbit that's 22,242 miles out, in which you can put a satellite that stays stationary over you. We now know in the 21st century we need a new worldview, and that's the exopolitics paradigm. And the 21st century paradigm is that we live in a populated universe filled with civilizations that are intelligent and evolving, many of which are many years in advance of our own. They operate under universal law. They have universe governance systems. They are mediated by universe politics. And we, Earth, here on Earth Day, to acknowledge it, we're an entry-level planet. So we need a 10-year process of formal, funded public education, scientific research, educational curricula, development. Just think of what this will do to the textbook business. I mean, this is an enormous economic stimulus. It's like a new, a sort of a sea change with tremendous a positive win-win economic linkage effects. Implementation, strategic planning, community activities, public outreach about our full cultural, political, social, legal, and governmental integration into a larger universe society. We're in a situation of having been under a 60-year or so information embargo, so that we're in a position of complete official ignorance. And we need a sea change, and we need to open the doors of federal funding into education, scientific research, and acknowledgement of this issue. Along with this, in an interactive period, we're calling for the initiation of public interest diplomacy with spiritually advanced off-planet cultures that are now visiting Earth. And we say public interest diplomacy, that's the analog of what many of us non-governmental organizations, including our own, the Institute for Cooperation in Space, during the Glasnost period, part of Perestroika restructuring, sort of having our own Perestroika at this time, which is a transitional period, and in the 1980s, we non-governmental organizations were able to deconstruct and go through the so-called Iron Curtain and bring the peoples of the world out of the communist capitalist paradigm. And this was all done unofficially. I myself, just to give an example, I produced and hosted the first live radio broadcast between the Soviet Union and the United States in the history of the world. It was 4.5 hours live, carried by Gosselaar Radio in the Soviet Union over all 11 time zones, carried by National Public Radio in the United States, and it was nominated for an award on the floor of the General Assembly. We had citizen to citizen in the Soviet Union hooked up talking with people on the street in Jersey City, New Jersey. People were crying on the radio. In a similar way, the embargo that we've had over the past 60 years has placed an artificial sort of barrier of ignorance and broken relationships with other civilizations that may be deeply related to our own, including genetically. So we are calling for these two. Now, this is not something that comes out of the blue, so to speak. This program of the Decade of Contact and the initiation of public interest diplomacy is firmly rooted in international law. And part of the embargo has been to attempt to erase on the public consciousness the fact that governments and international organizations have consistently voted. In Canada, in 1967, the Minister of Defense, Paul Hellyer, formally on behalf of the government, inaugurated on June 3rd, 1967, the world's first extraterrestrial landing pad welcoming all galactic civilizations in peace. Moreover, in 1978, and when we filed and tabled our exopolitics initiative in Canada with the Canadian Senate just last month, they remarked how wonderful it is that this is being taken forward under the umbrella of the United Nations General Assembly resolution, i.e., it's all legal. Because in 1978, the United Nations General Assembly, remember, the General Assembly is 191 nations, approved decision 33426, stating that, quote, the General Assembly invites interested member states to take appropriate steps to coordinate on a national level scientific research and investigation into extraterrestrial life, including unidentified flying objects, and to inform the Secretary General of observations, research, and evaluation of such activities. That's how the Canadian Senate and we in Canada will be going forward. And we invite the United States government to go under the authority, they spoke so much of the authority of United Nations resolutions when they went forward in Iraq. Well, we can go forward with the extraterrestrial issue under the clear authority of United Nations General Assembly resolution in 1978. You may recall that the member nation, the sovereign member nation, which sponsored this resolution, the nation of Grenada, sponsored in 1978, it was approved in 1982. The United States invaded that nation and overthrew that government. So I think that this is very much, Steve, an example possibly on the international level of how, yes, governments are aware of the extraterrestrial presence, and yes, some very violent things have been done, such as invasions of member states who sponsor resolutions at the international order. Fortunately, international law prevails. Justice is part of the natural order. We all know from jurisprudence that justice exists on planet Earth as a natural principle. All of our social laws are based on it. Justice exists on the moon, justice exists on Mars, and justice exists as a natural principle on Alpha Centauri. So we are part of universal law. We are part of universe society, like it or not. It's better to go under a condition of understanding where we can understand fully what we are doing, respect all of our sovereignty, respect all of human and individual rights under the U.S. Bill of Rights, under the U.S. Constitution, under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, of the Canadian Constitution, for example, and under the UN Declaration of Human Rights, for those who may have some thoughts that integration into universe society may be a threatening thing to human sovereignty. I would submit that universe governance adheres more to the principles of universal law than does several important terrestrial governments. To sum up, we, the Institute for Cooperation in Space, we have been active here in the United States for the last 4 or 5 years. Our bill, the Space Preservation Act, H.R. 2977 and then H.R. 3616, H.R. 3657, to permanently ban all weapons and warfare in space, has been part and introduced into the U.S. House of Representatives since October 2001, introduced by Representative Dennis Kucinich of Ohio. We are now rolling out our exopolitical initiative, and in coordination with the XPAC and with other groups, we'll be moving forward with an educational agenda with all candidates for political office in the Congress and for candidates in both 2006 and 2008 with policy statements and bills and implementation of this and with what we call the exopolitical platform, which is that a candidate would pledge, as Jimmy Carter did in 1976 in Wisconsin during the campaign. He did make this pledge, which he, in good faith, attempted to move on during his campaign. We're going to ask every, on a nonpartisan basis, Republican, Democrat, Green Party, Libertarian, et cetera, three elements. Number one, open acknowledgement that we live in a populated universe, or this question should be looked at. Number two, commitment to an open decade of contact, a 10-year period of federally funded education, scientific research, curriculum development, et cetera, et cetera. It's going to take a village to get us wise again. And number three, public interest diplomacy, the initiation in conjunction with the decade of contact of public interest diplomacy. And we're going to be approaching all of the candidates. So we're publicly announcing that today. Among the first persons that we will be approaching will be Representative Dennis Kucinich, who has introduced our bills on the space preservation issue in the past, and who we hope will have the courage, the political courage, to step up and put in the hopper a bill for the exopolitical initiative. We have put this platform also into a book that's just being released this week. It was released at the Exopolitics Conference, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, which sets out this platform in detail. I want to thank you very much for your patience, for listening to us, and opening up to any questions you may have of Steve and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Albert. I neglected to mention that all the gentlemen here were part of 27 men and women who presented at the X conference this last weekend. One of the things, the X PAC he was referring to is the Extraterrestrial Phenomena Political Action Committee, which I found in 1997. It's still the only political action committee in the United States which addresses this issue. All right. We have a limited amount of time to take questions. Anything goes here. Please don't hold back, and I may defer some of these questions to our support panel. Yes.
The problem with what President Clinton said is President Clinton has never really been put on the record by the press corps on the subject of UFOs. I think the statement you're referring to is, according to Stephen Greer, who talked to Sarah McClendon, the longtime White House reporter. Sarah McClendon finally went up to Bill Clinton and said, why don't you do something about this UFO thing? And Bill Clinton said, Sarah, there's a government inside the government and I don't control it. And we now have a second indication that President Ronald Reagan may have said basically the same thing on this whole question. The thing is that in 50 years, the president has never addressed a question on UFOs, not since December of 1954 when President Eisenhower faced a question on UFOs. And the importance of that is if there are extraterrestrial intelligence visiting this Earth, which I and many other researchers around the world believe, it is the most important issue of our era, and it is an issue that should be addressed by the president. The problem is that when you look at the president, it appears that a number of presidents are not being told the truth, or not being told what is going on, which I think, being a Canadian, is a very serious constitutional problem for the United States if the president doesn't know what's going on.
By the way, I'd like to mention that Grant Cameron has actually for 10 years been researching the interaction by all presidents of the United States in the modern era with this subject matter, and has compiled a manuscript about, I think it's 550 pages, and it has 450 footnotes. I am co-author of that manuscript, and we are awaiting a publisher who has the fortitude to print it. Another question? Yes, Ronnie. Interesting point. One man's European explorer is another person's extraterrestrial. I'll start with number three. To begin, please.
Okay. Number three is
terrorism. Yeah, the question is, really everything's terrorism now, so you really can't make any headway. It's an interesting point because approximately 4 years ago in the main room of the Press Club, a press conference was held by the Disclosure Project, which is run by other activists. This was a significant event with $50,000 behind it, and had a very good public relations person, a woman that I know, that fronted it. And what was done was that about 21, I think, government agency employees, part of about 120 that had been interviewed, about 2 hours each, into a massive compilation of witness testimony, eventually edited down to 3 hours. It was presented that day to the press, were brought in into the ballroom, and they gave firsthand testimony about how they'd engaged the issue while being employed by the government. Their testimony was pretty powerful. It's possible some of it might have been incorrect, either misinformation or fraud, but I'll take the other 19 people. All right, and there were 200 people there, and about 100 press. There were 17 camera crews. It was an extensive and important conference. I know for a fact that ABC News was planning follow-up. International press was quite interested, there's no telling what might have happened. But as we know, almost exactly 4 months after the May 9th, 2001 press conference, we had the events in New York. And, of course, then everything is subsumed. Fine. And we understand that. All right. There are times for subsumation. It happens. And I respect it to a point. Right? But the American people have got to be real careful that the government does not take advantage of opportunities like that to simply shove whole slates of issues off the table. And they will do it if you let them. So you've got to watch for that. And my other point would be that while I appreciate the importance of Iraq, and I appreciate the odd Middle Eastern war. The point is you've got Middle Eastern war, you've got extraterrestrials all over our airspace. Middle Eastern war, extraterrestrials possibly coercively abducting human beings. Middle Eastern war, sequestered technology from crash vehicles in our hands for years. It could possibly transform our planet, withheld and embargoed because of national policy. Which one should we work with? You'd like to say something, Michael? Go ahead.
Michael Sala, I want to address that first question of the logjam. How do we address that? I think we need to look at the way in which a number of individuals who are coming forward with information concerning classified projects involving extraterrestrial vehicles, involving extraterrestrial biological entities, that how these projects systematically keep this information from the general public. There are many whistleblowers who have come forward very bravely to reveal some segments of these projects, some of the information that they have been privy to. These whistleblowers have had an extraordinarily difficult time in getting this information out without being unnecessarily exposed to very harsh attacks from the general public, from the mass media, and many researchers who are incredulous at the claims of many of these researchers. Of many of these whistleblowers, some of the whistleblowers are well known to those who have been exploring these issues concerning extraterrestrials. People like Colonel Philip Corso, people like Sergeant Major Master Sergeant Robert Dean, Sergeant Clifford Stone, who have revealed aspects of their involvement with various projects where these extraterrestrial beings were part of the ongoing activities that national security agencies have been conducting in secret without revealing this to the general public. These whistleblowers come forward risking their reputations, risking their their retirement packages, risking even their personal safety and the safety and the careers of their family, disclosing this information without any protection at all from federal government or from any public agencies interested in whistleblower testimonies. Whistleblowers generally are protected under federal statutes, but when whistleblowers come forward to reveal information concerning classified projects, there is no protection. One of the whistleblowers who has recently come forward has addressed the third and fourth questions, I believe, that you raised. That is Charles Hall, who is a whistleblower that was brought into the public by another investigator, a prominent researcher, Paola Harris, who couldn't be with us today. But what was revealed by Charles Hall in his testimony and in the investigations I'm conducting, along with some others such as David Coutis, who is also here today, is that Charles Hall was involved in a classified project at Nellis Air Force Base from 1964 to 65, where he directly encountered extraterrestrial biological entities that had reached agreements with the United States Air Force, where these biological entities would exchange technology and information concerning their propulsion systems, concerning their navigation in interstellar flight and transportation. And in exchange for that, the United States Air Force was giving basing rights to these extraterrestrial beings, was giving various resources such as metals, titanium metals, also clothing and food resources, presumably for off-world bases that were supplied by these resources. Charles Hall is one of those whistleblowers with extraordinary claims, which we investigators are trying to find corroborating evidence for. We're having some success to corroborate his testimony, and I believe that this is the kind of testimony that we need to look for to break the logjam and to also get information on exactly what is happening with the extraterrestrial entities that have reached agreements with the national security agencies and military organizations such as the U.S. Air Force. Thank you.
All right, Richard Dolan.
I want to come back to your third question regarding the connection with terrorism, because I think that the issue of unidentified aerial objects connects to this. There have been, in these excellent presentations, there's something missing for the general public in the mainstream media, and that is the indication that this is a real topic. And what I mean by that is the testimony of whistleblowers is essential and needs to be followed up because it's legitimate and because we are not on a level playing field in the sense of trying to get information out of our government on some of these issues. However, it has to be recognized that even in the official literature, there is an overwhelming mass of proven, real government documents that have been released largely through the Freedom of Information Act, that show decades of, for example, airspace violations, very sensitive places, by objects doing what appear to be the impossible. We have these documents from the 1940s, we have them from the 1950s, we have them from the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and beyond. So these airspace violations continue. They are provocative, they are at times seemingly confrontational. You have pilots who have been going, who have been charged with going up to get these things, and they have described them at times saying, yes, it appears to be a metallic disc-shaped, there it goes. And that has happened. Now, this happens to this very day. In July of 2002, right here in the Washington, D.C. area, there was yet again a airspace jet chase by two F-16 jet interceptors charged, which were chasing a bluish object right outside D.C. In fact, we have one of the key eyewitnesses here in this room today. This received some play in the Washington Post and a little bit of mainstream media, then, of course, fell into the black hole of the media, never to be discussed again. What were these objects that were able to outperform F-16 interceptors in a post-9/11 America? What is going on? Now, if this is a connection to terrorism, I don't know. but it's certainly quite significant. Now, where is the media in following up on this? In addition, there are reliable, absolutely positively locked down reports of objects that are perfect triangles traversing the skies of this country and indeed world. What are these things? Who's making them? Is this, as some people speculate, some deep classified black project within the bowels of the U.S. defense community? Maybe. Maybe not. There is evidence to show that for the last 15 years at least, U.S. scientific military personnel have been experimenting with craft that do not appear to use traditional aerodynamics. That is, that they appear to be using some form of field propulsion known as anti-gravity. This is very well evidenced due to aviation watchers out in the western U.S. in particular. So there's something going on. Now, if this is classified project, fine. But you know what? You are a citizen of the United States of America. That means you are the citizen of a republic. That means you do have a right to know what your tax dollars are going toward if this is a 15-year project. It's an expensive project. That means it has to do with your money. And if nothing else, this is an issue, therefore, that is concerned with fiscal responsibility, to say nothing of the technological implications, to say nothing of the political implications of a culture of secrecy that has descended over this society. So there are many, many connections with the UFO phenomenon, if we want to call it that, that have to do with the terrorism issue, that have to do with all kinds of public policy issues. And one thing I would encourage mainstream media, any journalists who are here or are listening to this, is to start asking questions about who is operating some of this technology. Forget the question for the moment of aliens or ET. That's on the table too, but let's let that wait for a moment. We have to do first things first. And for the large majority of the public who may not have much knowledge of this, perhaps the question of ET is a bit much to swallow at first. All right, so let's do one thing at a time, and let's start looking at this technology. Thanks.
Grant, you wanted to speak?
I'll just give you a little short response on your question about who are the Republican backers. Ronald Reagan was terribly fascinated with the whole subject of UFOs. We've documented that he's had at least three UFO sightings, which were described, his son described one. There was a couple of others. But basically, when you're talking Republicans, to sum up who are their backers, everybody who knows what's going on is basically in the Republican, because you basically have the military, which basically backs the Republicans. And one of the things with the Republicans, they take an issue of security over open government, these kind of issues of war and security, terrorism, this sort of thing. And to give you an example of that, on April 11th, 2001, on the Diana Rehm Show, the local radio talk show here, I addressed the question to Dick Cheney, because I say the most important question to put to any high-ranking official is not what do you think about UFOs or have you seen one. The most important question is, have you ever been briefed on the subject? Did someone walk in your office and tell you what's going on? Because if someone walks into the president's office or some high-ranking official and briefs him on the subject of UFOs, it is for real. It's not imaginary, as the government has been saying for 60 years. So I asked Mr. Cheney, this is 3 months after he became the vice president, I asked him on the air, and this is still on Diana Rehm's archives, Mr. Cheney, in all your jobs in government, have you ever been briefed on the subject of UFOs? And if so, when was it and what were you told? And Mr. Cheney said, if I had been briefed on that subject, it probably would have been classified and I wouldn't be talking about it. Basically shows to me this thing's for real, it's classified, it's secret, and the people who control it do not want it to come out.
Thank you. We have another question? We're going to keep our answers shorter, though. David Coot?
Yes, sir. I'm going to answer that this way, and it's not a dodge, but I think you'll understand. It's a wonderful question. These are deep issues. And Alfred, I think, could probably talk for 25 hours on it, and so could I and some others. But I think we're ahead of ourselves. Why? This is kind of something that's happened in this. In other words, you think there's extraterrestrials here? Okay, fine. Would you please first approve advanced calculus from first principles of geometry? Okay. If you could do that, then we'll go forward on this other thing. Look, the issue here is, are there extraterrestrials engaging the planet? And does the evidence prove it? It does. That's what needs to be looked at. I'm not, at this point, able to, as far as I know, create global peace and or stability or anything else. That's up to the world governments to do. My point is that whatever the government's going to do about world peace, or whatever your interests are in world peace, or advancement of his civilization, it's going to be dramatically held back if massive information, huge holes in your worldview are being denied you. So I'm simply saying let's have that information and work with it, and hopefully we'll arrive at some of those things, but I don't want to have to do that first in order to get the press to come and say, well, you created global peace, and so we'll now look at your issue for you. Another question, please. Yes? The question is what would be a strategy that would convince the average person that it's a pocketbook issue, something that could actually take money away from them? Richard?
Great question, Billy. Well, one thing that we can recognize is even through the, again, officially unarguable literature, that there is excellent evidence to show that some of these advanced objects have been recovered by U.S. military personnel. On top of that, there have been a number of individuals who have spoken out through either through personal knowledge or through research, things that have come to them, that there are indeed at deeply classified levels programs charged with studying technology that did not originate from this civilization. And indeed, these statements have been made by some individuals who are quite prominent in this world, and that includes Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, who made such a statement a year ago. Now, Dr. Mitchell walked on the moon. He has many very, very influential and powerful friends. And this doctor and astronaut a year ago, and at other times, has stated that he had two elite-level sources who confirmed to him the existence of such programs. Any UFO researcher who's been in this field long enough will probably establish contacts like that. I myself have spoken with other scientists, very elite-level individuals, who have also confirmed this to me. It's a tricky situation because people don't want to go on record about this, and it's an act of tremendous courage on his part, Dr. Mitchell's part, that he did. So the point is this. If there are such programs to study such technology, one has to assume that they cost a lot of money. Now, this is money that is not being acknowledged in any budget that Congress will pass. All right, it's part of what we call the black budget. And so I don't have all the answers here, but I would have to think that one strategy would be to make some noise about this and find out how can we get some access to this black budget. I mean, first of all, that in itself is an issue that we need to get more of a hold over. I think there's someone else who wants to deal with that question.
I want to just make some comments about the black budget. According to the Federation of Atomic Scientists, who look at the size of the black budget that they're able to deduce from documents that have been released by the CIA, they estimate it to be somewhere in the vicinity of about $38 billion, according to those in the Congressional Accounting Office. They look at the black budget or projects that are funded by these funds, and they estimate those to be around the $4 billion mark. According to the investigations of various ways in which organizations such as the CIA funnel money into the black budgets, into the covert projects that are used for supposedly extraterrestrial technologies and projects associated with extraterrestrial biological entities, estimates go as high as $1 trillion a year. Supporting evidence for that high amount for the black budget comes from Inspector General reports that have been released for the Department of Defense in 1988, 1999, and the year 2000. These, the accounting or the auditing of the Department of Defense came out with $1.7 trillion that could not be accounted for each, on average, for those 3 years. In the subsequent years, 2000, 2001, the Inspector General of the Department of Defense could not come up with a figure. He could not do that. Subsequent years, 2002 and up until this time, the Department of Defense has not had to do this rigorous auditing mechanism because the Bush administration has let them off the hook.
Yeah, I began on this topic by trying to do reverse engineering on gravity control devices in 1968, but now I'm officially looking at leaked question documents. And some of the documents tell an amazing story, and in particular in connection with the last question, one of the leaked documents started with FDR, and FDR had set up, through Vannevar Bush, a committee called the Non-Terrestrial Science and Engineering Committee. These were guys, after the recovery of a crash flying saucer in 1942, who were given the parts and told to figure out how they work. They came back to FDR in 1944 and asked for money. And he said, no, we got to win the war first, beat the Nazis. And then in 1947, it was Vannevar Bush who went to President Truman, who didn't know about all this, and said, by the way, we have these craft. We could do some reverse engineering in order to improve our country, to improve our culture, to improve our standard of living. And that was when the money started to flow.